This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Alexa, how do I stay safe on the internet? Well, one step may be to know when Alexa or Siri or Google Assistant is listening and recording. The number of challenges to staying safe and private online continues to grow, but you can stay safe. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss how to protect your privacy online and how much personal information many of us are willing to trade for efficiency or convenience is cybersecurity consultant with Entrust IT, Dave Hatter. He's also the mayor of the very fine city of Fort Wright, Kentucky. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Michael. Always good to be here.
Any questions or comments, give us a call and join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look to get some of your questions or comments into the show as well. So, Dave, I got a new phone over the weekend, and the first thing that's happening is all my apps are transferring from my previous phone into this one. And so you get those questions at the top. By using this app, you are granting permission to do this, 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 and this. Who has the time to read all that? What exactly am I giving them permission to do?
Well, that is a very, very good question, Michael. Unfortunately, depending on the app and the permissions it's asking for, you might be giving them permission to do just about anything they want to. You know, the guys that make these apps realize that most people don't really understand the questions that they're being asked and or aren't going to take the time to try to research. And to some extent, you almost either have to be some sort of nerd like me and or an attorney to really even understand this stuff. So they know that you're probably just going to say, yeah, sure, take it all. And at that point, they can collect an enormous amount of information about you, your location, your contacts, pretty much virtually anything and everything in your phone, depending on the particular type of phone you have, the particular operating system on that phone, and that sort of thing.
You know, I like to read the Washington Post before I go to bed every night because I like to be terrified as I fall asleep about the state of things. And one article caught my eye just last night as I'm sitting there holding the Kindle and reading this and thinking, well, here I am holding a gadget to begin with, reading this article. But it was all about this woman's experience in realizing what the apps are doing while she's sleeping. She was describing how various apps are sending data about her personal life and her locations and the types of activities she's engaged in to other services and other groups all around the world. I mean, this is happening.
It's happening all the time. And if you think about it, now I'm going to just go on the record and say, I'm a tinfoil hat guy. You know, I understand how this stuff works fairly well. And I love the term, I wish I would have coined this, but I didn't, surveillance capitalism. If you think about this for a second, you're going out and buying a phone, probably for not a lot of money. It costs a lot to build that phone. And various vendors, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Amazon, are providing relatively advanced services, things that were basically only dreamt of maybe 20 years ago, at little to no cost to you. So you're getting a fairly expensive device with all these great services, maps. I mean, think about all the things you can do from your phone now. They're not doing that stuff just because they're nice guys and they want to make your life better. They're basically having you trade off all of this information about you for all of these products and services that they're giving you at little to no cost. Again, surveillance capitalism has become sort of the most recent way to describe this. I think it's an excellent way to describe it because you really have to decide for yourself how much of these features, functions, capabilities am I willing to essentially give you all of my information to use in exchange? And my answer for me is not that many, frankly. But folks, the guys building this stuff know that most people don't really understand what those questions are asking and, frankly, how advanced the capabilities of your phone really are in terms of, you know, it's got a, many of them have a barometer, they got a gyroscope, accelerometer, all kinds of different sensors that can be tapped into to determine just about anything about you. And in many cases, when you're using an app like Facebook, of course, their entire model at this point is based on surveillance capitalism. They're selling and trading your information to all kinds of people. And as I'm sure you know, they've been embroiled in a lot of privacy scandals recently.
You would expect it from Facebook because we're talking about it so much and we know what they're doing. But in transferring to this new phone over the weekend, it had been a couple years since I got a new phone and they get better and more powerful all the time. I basically am carrying a laptop in my pocket.
Pretty much.
I was surprised by the variety of apps and uses that the phone performs, asking me questions about what I will allow it to do. Just the text app, the camera wanted to know whether it could know my location. I don't even know why that's important.
Well, the reason why that might be important, and that's an excellent question. I'm glad you brought that up because I don't think a lot of people realize that almost all digital cameras made in the last probably 5 to 10 years store something called EXIF information in the photograph. So when you take a picture assuming it has access to GPS, Wi-Fi, or some way to determine your location, as part of the metadata it stores in that digital image, it stores the location that picture was taken at. People have gone to jail over this sort of thing because they don't realize that they take a picture, they post it online, and then let's say some sort of criminal situation were to happen, well, you can't really deny you were there when you have a photo that has your location in it. So that would be one of the reasons why your camera would want to know the location so it can stamp that data into the photographs. In theory, that could be a useful feature to you. Yeah, not so much for me. That's the kind of thing I would definitely turn off personally.
Well, if we do turn it off, or if we do say no to some of these permissions that they request, do they listen to that?
Now, that is the $64,000 question there. I honestly can't answer that question, and I don't think really anyone can without being able to analyze the code in these applications. I would like to hope that they do. I like to think that they do, and I think if you're building an app where you're asking for permissions and then you just choose not to follow them anyway, I think you're going to probably find yourself in some legal hot water eventually, whether it's some sort of civil case or some sort of criminal case. But we know in the past there have been situations where various questions, settings, and so forth that people think they've turned on, there have been some issues with Uber, weren't really behaving the way that people thought they were. So again, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And I tend to fall strictly into that paranoid tinfoil hat wearing camp myself. So I have tried to limit my footprint of various apps and pretty much don't use anything that isn't something I really need to exist on a daily basis because I understand they're collecting all this information. Is that necessarily bad? Not really. I mean, I don't want to be like Davy Doom here. But at the same time, I'm not really willing to give up all that information about myself. And not only because I just don't want it out there, but you can't really guarantee how someone will use it once they have it, whether it might get leaked or breached and end up on the dark web, or frankly, sold to a third party who may then do something with it, or have it leaked, breached, et cetera. So, you know, I'm trying to keep my footprint as minimal as possible and use as few apps as I can.
Well, we probably all have some degree of paranoia in our lives. And I know one growing area of concern is whether these devices are just simply listening to us. Now, look, if I'm on a website or if I'm on the laptop and I'm Googling details about a product and then I see some ads about it in Facebook, I get that. I guess I can understand that these large tech giants have communicated with one another that this is what I'm into and this is what I should be pushed to buy. But there are those weird occasions where I didn't search for it on Google. I was talking about it in the car with my friend and now I'm getting those ads for a type of car or a type of clothing product. Are they listening?
I think the answer is yes. There's been a lot of speculation about this. And then there have been known cases where, for example, the Google Home product, if you think about it, Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft all have what I will just generally describe as personal digital assistants, Siri, Cortana, Alexa, et cetera. They have to listen in order to be able to provide their basic capability, right? I mean, it reminds me a little bit. It seems so funny because, you know, I'm almost 50. I can remember watching Star Trek and, you know, they talk to the computer and it's like, well, that's so futuristic. That could never happen. And here we are. So in theory, these things are listening for their wake word, hot word, go word, at which point then they record whatever you say, send that off for some kind of processing and come back with some kind of response. Is that the only time they're listening? Well, again, there are known cases. Google admitted they had a, quote, bug, unquote, where they were listening all the time. There's a really interesting article. A guy went out and went back through 4 years of his Alexa history. It's in the CT Post. And he found all kinds of instances where, you know, could it have been the TV said Alexa or whatever activated it? It recorded things that he did not expect to be in there. And, you know, whether it's recording things and then using that to schlep products on you through Facebook or Google or whatever, or it's just recording things that perhaps you would not like to be recorded, I think it's a major concern. Now, again, you're talking to a guy who doesn't use any of these things. I don't use Alexa. I don't use Siri. I have all that stuff turned off.
But you've got kids. How do you keep these items out of your home? I mean, they must want them.
It's really hard. I mean, yeah, my older kids are kind of beyond that point. The younger one, I mean, and, you know, they use that stuff on their phone. Could I get recorded through their phone? Yes. But I have purposely not brought any kind of smart devices that can listen into my home other than people's cell phones. And I have no intention of doing that anytime in the near future. Not to mention, if you think hackers aren't trying to figure out how to hack those things to steal more information about you, foist more attacks on you, you're out of your mind. So it's too early for me. I'll wait a while on that.
I did something else over the weekend on this new phone that I'd never done before. And I paid someone with the Venmo app. And, you know, again, all of these devices talking to each other, it's so strange. It's very convenient, right?
It is extremely convenient.
But in order to use Venmo, which is this popular payment method digitally, I had to sign up. I had to give my bank account, like my direct checking account to this thing talking to me on the phone, and they did something weird, right? They're like, okay, we're going to verify this is your bank account. We're going to deposit and then immediately withdraw two very small amounts of money. You have to enter how much that is. It was like 13 cents and 14 cents that had happened. So they communicated with my bank, put this money in, took this money out, and I had to verify that it was there. And then I made the payment. How vulnerable have I made myself now to everyone who wants it in my checking account?
I don't know that that would necessarily make you more vulnerable. Venmo's pretty popular. There aren't any known breaches that I'm aware of so far. And if you think about it, that whole idea of electronic funds transfer is nothing new. That's been around for some time. And I think of all the industries out there, banking is probably the most secure at this point because, you know, in the early days of all of this stuff, that's where most of the attacks were going because that's where the money is. They've gotten very good at detecting fraud. They've gotten very good at building, and I'm going to use this term in not really technical sense, firewalls around their system. So they're difficult to break into. You know, I don't use Venmo personally. I can't say that I could never be convinced to use Venmo. It's just, you know, I'm an old dude. I don't know anyone to Venmo any money to other than my kids, and they just ask for cash, you know?
Well, I was making a cash purchase from a friend, and I didn't want to have to. It was Sunday. It's like, I don't want to drive out. It's like, I'm going to do this. You have a Venmo? He says, okay, here it is. Here's my Venmo name. And I just did it. And I didn't get concerned about what I was doing because I was enjoying the convenience so much. It was afterwards where I thought, I'm an idiot.
Nah, I think you're probably okay. I would never rule out anything. Clearly, the bad guys out there are going to attack all of these services because there's money there. But in many cases, a lot of these attacks have moved on to things like PHI, personal health information, because there's a lot of money to be made with that information because the healthcare industry, generally speaking, is not nearly as advanced as the financial industry. And a lot of this information is being stolen. It's sold on the dark web for large sums of money. So I, you know, wherever there's money, they're going to come after it. But again, I wouldn't worry so much about Venmo. I think the way they've gone about it, it's pretty secure. I think Apple Pay is pretty secure. But you know, the thing I didn't ask you is, so what kind of phone did you get, Michael?
Well, I probably am not allowed to advertise, I don't suppose, but it's one of those, I mean, it's the one of the Galaxy Notes is what I got, okay? And I'm not a gadgety guy, but I needed a new phone. I had broken the other one, and I needed it, and this one comes with a little pin, and
It's pretty nifty. It's got a lot of cool functionality.
It does, but it did ask me all those questions, and I just wanted the pen. I just wanted to be able to write notes, you know, when I'm interviewing somebody on this.
Which is kind of nice.
It is kind of nice. The other thing is that all these gadgets communicating with one another, whether we want them to or not, sometimes we do want them to. And you have all these opportunities to consolidate them into maybe from your phone. I can now do my home security, my garage door. I can look up the security cameras in my office right now on the phone. Are there any increased dangers when you consolidate them all into one central command?
Good question. Now, I bet you can guess what my answer to that will be.
I bet it involves a tinfoil hat.
It does. Yeah, the answer is yes. And in fact, not only from a security standpoint, but from an availability standpoint, you may recall last Sunday, not this past Sunday, the Sunday before that, Google had a major outage. They had a bunch of services that were down for about 4 hours. And interestingly enough, talking about the interconnectivity of all these companies, some of Apple's cloud service was out because they rely on Google infrastructure for it. But where I'm going with that is, so Google owns Nest. Some people were locked out of their house. Some people couldn't use their cameras, monitors, et cetera, because of the Google outage. So in addition to the fact that, yes, all those devices are collecting ever more information about you that's being aggregated and used in ways probably you couldn't even dream of, which, again, in and of itself isn't necessarily bad. You just have to decide how much of a footprint you want. As these things get more and more connected into our daily lives, they do provide the possibility of some significant outage or, frankly, some hacker figuring out how to disable all of the Nest locks and, you know, break into whatever house is convenient or any kind of thing like that. So you hope that the vendors that make this stuff are doing the right things in terms of security, But we see time and time again, these products are rushed to market. Security is typically an afterthought. And then it leads to the kind of problems we're talking about here.
You use Facebook and you use Twitter. I see you making frequent posts. You use Twitter a lot. How does somebody like you with that hat on, that tinfoil hat on, or the concerns and even the knowledge that you have about the industry, how do you choose which apps to use and where to use them?
Well, that is one of the best questions I've been asking a long time, because it seems to sort of belie everything that I've just said here. I don't use the Facebook app or the Twitter app from my phone. I only use Facebook from a browser where I have a lot more control. And same thing with Twitter, only from a web browser on a full-blown PC where there's a lot more control over what it can and can't do. And again, without getting too technical, it's not truly sandboxed, but there's a lot more control. You know, I can lock down what it's doing, as opposed to once you put the Facebook app on your phone, you know, that thing is going to suck out every piece of information it can. I stopped using the Facebook app probably a year and a half ago. And I also, to a large extent, understand the trade-off that I'm making for the convenience of using some of these tools. You know, for me, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn is a good way to try to share this sort of privacy and security-related information so that folks will understand it better and hopefully be able to decide for themselves how much of a footprint do they want to have out there, how much information do they need to want to expose, you know, what should they be doing to try to secure their stuff, because the bad guys are always, I mean, they're working around the clock trying to figure out how to steal your information, how to cause problems for you and your business. They never cease, and the field is always shifting, so it's hard to stay up with this stuff, and I'm hoping that these tools give me a way to try to help folks that maybe aren't as savvy to understand what's going on and make smart decisions.
There are different types of bad guys, too. Some are big, some are small. Mm-hmm. We know that there are some big bad guys trying to interfere in American democracy. There's really no other way to say that. So in our last minute or so, are our elections going to be safe this year and next year?
It's a major concern of mine. You know, DEF CON is a big security conference every year. At the DEF CON 2018 event, they had an 11-year-old show how they could defeat the state of Florida's Board of Election System. A lot of these election systems are really old. You know, these would be some good questions to ask someone like Abe Summey in the future. There are known examples of election systems that have just rife with all kinds of security problems. The CEO of one of the largest companies that makes actual voting machines recently came out and said he's now in favor of not having any machines that won't produce a paper ballot. There's at least four states who still use those. You know, whether it's hacking the voter database, it's trying to hack the systems, it's trying to intercept the data between the systems and the Board of Elections. Yeah, I think it's a significant risk. And paper ballots, I'm all for it. And I'm also all for no online voting at this point. It's too soon.
Back to paper we all go.
Yes.
Dave Hatter is a cybersecurity consultant with Intrust IT. He's also the mayor of Fort Wright, the tinfoil capital of Kentucky. Dave, thanks for coming on and talking to us today.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.